In the early 90s, there were Ninja Turtle movies, and they were bizarre and memorable. In the late 2010s, there were Ninja Turtle movies, and they were terrible and boring. In 2007, there was a Ninja Turtle movie, and it was. But don't worry, we also watched Aliens, both of which were the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with a doomed spaceship crew. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Cowabunga.
Other than that tease, we're going to pretend this is a normal episode, because that's the Rocky III protocol. I figured out what the Rocky III protocol is. If that's confusing, it'll make sense later. Kinda. But for now, this is just an episode of the podcast about 2007 animated film TMNT that will have no conversations relevant to last week's episode. By the way, so navel-gazy to talk about your own show on your own show, but man, did I love last week's episode.
Yes. It was great. Addy was awesome, and it was really fun.
It was a great episode. It's our highest rated movie ever, 89.5 out of 100. I feel like it is in keeping with things that then we landed on, you know, a whatever of the film. You know, I'll jump ahead to say I didn't hate this movie, TMNT. It was there. It was fine. And I know what Tony was after. There's a little Ninja Turtle moment in the podcast world right now.
Is there?
Oh.
There's a Comedy Bang Bang spinoff where apparently, like, they kept devolving into Ninja Turtle conversations. Huh. So they launched a side podcast called We Have to Stop Talking About TMNT on CBB, where they just have the Turtles conversations.
Not so dissimilar, you know, to doing the Keanu review after doing Theronathon.
I feel like Tony was just speaking to me because Sarah Michelle Gellar was in this, and he's like, hey, you like her, right? Huh? 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 No, Tony, not the same.
That was a moment for me when I recognized Sarah Michelle Gellar. So first, Larry Fishburne. I was like, what is happening? What is going on? It's like the Weinstein Company comes up and I'm like, I don't understand. Lawrence Fishburne starts narrating. I'm like, wait a second. Sarah Michelle Gellar's the voice of April O'Neil. What? What? Chris Evans is the voice of Casey Jones. Is this a real movie?
I know. And first of all,
doesn't feel like it, does it?
No, and I went to watch the trailer before I watched it. And it's basically a commercial for the video game is the trailer.
Oh.
And I was so confused. It took me like I was like, wait a minute. Am I watching the right movie? Is this a movie? Is this a movie? Because there were a lot of questions like that.
I know it is such a cliche to say bad CGI looks like a video game cutscene. This whole thing is a video game
cutscene. The whole thing.
Like, it's just the only way to describe it.
Yeah. And I wasn't
sure. Other way is ugly. One other tie-in is at some point they're talking about, I think, the Night Watcher, and they say, like, I hear you can turn into a plane. So it reminded me of Transformers.
I mean, the modern Ninja Turtles movies are basically two more Transformers movies. They feel exactly the same. They have the same terrible plotting. They have the same ugly CGI. They're Michael Bay produced. And like, we're talking about, you know, 80s cartoon properties. TMNT is a clear chaser for our journey into Transformers hell. We took two stiff, eye-searing shots of Transformers and then had a little Ninja Turtles to, like, get us back to reality.
Right, exactly. To get you safely into the cab home.
Well, I mean, you could give a recap of this that's just, you know, the turtles, right? They do the things they do. But presumably, with more information, here's Robin Hitchcock with this week's 60-second recap.
Okay, so there are turtles who are mutants, ninjas, and allegedly teenage, although they act like they're 40. And Leonardo has been in Central America training, in air quotes, to be a better leader. And meanwhile, the other turtles have fallen apart. Donatello is an IT guy. Michelangelo is Johnny Karate. And Raphael has become a solo vigilante named the Night Watcher. And so then April O'Neil gets an evil statue, which Patrick Stewart made 3,000 years ago to be immortal. And I'm running out of time and I don't feel like I've properly summarized this, but they do ninja things and then they become a team again. And I feel very nervous right now.
Well, you have 15 more seconds.
Right. Patrick Stewart wanted to not be immortal all along. It was like the bad guy's evil scheme was probably a good scheme. The end. Oh, and Chris Evans plays Casey Jones.
Right, yeah. That.
You get, I mean, seriously. Seriously.
I need to stop doing the extemporaneous plot summaries because it's a source of stress. Also, there was an obvious musical way to do this, to use the theme song from the cartoon of my youth, and I'm just unprepared.
We need to keep singing the recap as a sometimes treat. Like we can't start establishing that could just happen every week.
No, right. I don't want to have to do that.
You can do a recap of a Turtles property without watching it. It's like, there are the Turtles. Raphael and Leonardo aren't getting along. There's a vaguely but geographically non-specific mythical backstory. They learn to fight together and beat it. Casey Jones. That's every turtle.
Were either one of you into the Turtles as a child?
I was really into the Turtles, particularly the cartoon that ran from the late 80s to the mid-90s. And the video games and the figures and t-shirts and the first round of movies. I tried to talk like Michelangelo as like a 6-year-old.
Yes.
Yes, I was the exact right age and temperament.
And gender.
Right.
And gender. Definitely that. To be very taken by Turtle Mania at that time. I remember going to Kmart to meet the Ninja Turtles, where they would have four guys in, you know, elaborate fluffy Ninja Turtle suits, and it was a big day if you were 6.
Love it.
It's like meeting Santa at the mall, but it's turtles.
Yeah. Yeah. So better. So right. Indisputably better. So yes. Big fan, Robin.
I'm the same age-ish as Sean, so also in the demographic of people who would be obsessed with the Turtles, but I gotta plead woman, because I remember watching the cartoon and I watched the movies, but the thing that I really remember is being on the playground and wanting to play while the boys played Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and me and the other girls had to fight over who would be April. And there could only be one April. There's like 15 Donatellos running around. But they would only let one girl be with them. And that is what radicalized me. That is why I am a bossy killjoy feminist, is because I'm mad that I couldn't play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I also think that fighting over April made a generation of women become that I'm really only friends with guys. Girls have too much drama kind of people. I have talked about this with other women my age. I am not the only person who feels this way.
Interesting. I was just like a bystander. Like, I think I watched the shows, watched the cartoons, because, you know, if you didn't have cable and then you like come home from school and that's what's on or whatever or on Saturday mornings, whenever it was on. But I was like, obviously I was a little too old to be like really into it. I was probably like 11 or 12 maybe when these came out, but I did have 4 gerbils and I named them Leonardo, Donatello, Raphael, and Michelangelo. And
that's the right thing to do.
And there was a point, and I remember as an adult, few friends of mine and I watched the 80s or 90s movie, whenever the first movies were, watched one of those movies, and it was Elias Koteas as Casey.
Part of my sexual awakening.
Right. So, but I had these two friends, they almost went to blows saying that Elias and Milani, Chris Milani, weren't the same person.
Wait, who's Chris Milani?
From The Sopranos?
No, from Law and Order SVU.
I can actually totally see that.
Yes, they do absolutely look exactly the same. But but these friends of mine, they almost like went to blows. Well, one of them was like, no, they're two separate people. The other one was like, no, it's the same person. And it was
Have we ever seen them in the same place?
So that is the height of my Ninja Turtle world.
My other Ninja Turtle youth anecdote is that when my mom was pregnant with my little brother, and we knew it was going to be a boy, I was like, a boy. And I was like, he's going to be obsessed with the Ninja Turtles. And my mom was like, by the time he's old enough, there'll be something different. And there was. And it was the Power Rangers, which I think it's fair to say the Power Rangers are not as cool as the Ninja Turtles.
No, much worse. I would have preferred the Ninja Turtles.
They're not as cool, but slightly more progressive in that there were, you know, the girls and the boys. The girls were on the team. They weren't an April O'Neil. There were, yeah.
Even though I was annoyed by this show, I definitely watched it, and I wanted to be April O'Neil. Like, she is part of the reason that when I was a kid, I wanted to be a nosy reporter, which leads me to one of my complaints about this movie. What's up with April O'Neil being in the import-export business? Shouldn't she be a photojournalist?
Right. It just kind of defeats that. That just fucks up the whole everything. Like, I don't.
Yeah. Unless she was like deep cover for an expose.
I was so thrown off by the whole thing. I'm like, Central America? I thought when they started off with that, I was.
Also, I love the non-specificity of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Somewhere that's not New York.
Y'all don't really need to know.
It's one step from saying Western Hemisphere. Right. Like, don't worry about it. It's
also something else that has a connection with the Transformers movies, you know, like somewhere, wherever the fuck they were. And then it would be like Antarctica.
And The Mummy, which we did recently, right. Too. Another. Yeah. This brand of movie does not want to give you geographical hues.
No.
Just before I forget, is April O'Neil the yellow jumpsuit bridge between Bruce Lee and the bride in Kill Bill?
Accurate. Like,
I know that it's Quentin, so we don't need like a step between Bruce Lee, but like April put on that jumpsuit a good 13 years before Uma Thurman.
When I see a yellow jumpsuit, I think April O'Neil.
Anyway. Let's try to explain what happened here in a slightly briefer form than usual for reasons that'll become obvious in about 20 minutes. TMNT, the abbreviations one, was released March 23rd, 2007, the ninth number one film of the year. It won its opening weekend with $24.2 million. I think the reason this is a number one.
There's a lot of divorced dads trying to connect to their sons and then taking them to the movie.
Accurate.
I need something to do where I don't have to think. Yes. That and this is one of those like Battle Royale box office weekends. Where it's not, there wasn't a big thing, so the studios just threw everything out to see what would happen. There were six new wide releases in the top 10 this weekend. TMNT finished first. 300 was in second. It was the third weekend of 300. It had won the previous two weekends. Shooter, the Mark Wahlberg movie that was a little bit of a disappointment, was in third, underperformed at $14.5 million. The family feature, The Last Mimsy, no one remembers that. Fifth place, $10.2 million. The Hills Have Eyes 2 was in sixth, $9.6 million. Rain Over Me with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle, a melodramatic 9/11 movie, was in eighth, $7.4 million. And a movie called Pride, where Terrence Howard runs an inner city swim team, was in ninth with $3.5 million. Just so much shit came out that something had to climb to the top of the pile, and TMNT hit the most demographics, I guess. And then it didn't do well at any point after that. It fell to fourth place the following weekend, was only in the top 10 for one more week after that. It made a total of $54.1 million, 46th overall for the year. By the way, Rob Zombie's Halloween is 44th. This did a little worse than our pre-Transformers worst movie ever. Still, a much worse performance than the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which opened 27 years earlier in 1990. It opened higher, even without adjusting, The first Ninja Turtles movie in 1990 opened with $25.3 million, went on to make $135 million in 1990. It was a four-week number one movie in America and the number five movie of 1990.
Wow.
It had two sequels. Secret of the Ooze was a three-week number one movie in America. The following year, it made $78.6 million. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 was in 94, I believe. It was only a two-week number one movie in America, made $42.2 million. That is the only one of these movies that made less than TMNT. And the two Michael Bay produced but not directed films from recent years. So there's two movies called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and one called TMNT. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014 was a giant hit, $191 million domestic, a lot more than that worldwide. Out of the Shadows in 2016 fell off a little bit, still a number one movie in America. That's the point. There have been six theatrical Ninja Turtle movies. All six of them were the number one movie in America.
Wow.
The Turtles just do not go away.
Wow. That's amazing.
And apparently stay teenaged.
Right? It's amazing to me that it can go across generations like that. Because after some point, you would think it'd just be kooky to like these kids nowadays. I don't know. But I mean, do they, and like the ones now, do they? Because that's one of the things I was like kind of confused about, or I was questioning was like 2007, are they still going to be talking like Cowabunga Dude and Hang Ten and all that stuff? Because that was clearly, that was a thing in the 80s that people did. And 90, you could sort of kind of still get away with that. But like, what kids in 2007 and beyond, like, why they're got a question, like, why do they talk like that? Why are they saying these words? What does that mean?
Explain surf culture to me, Dad.
Right.
I love the line, why skate a half pipe when you can skate a sewer pipe? Many reasons, most of them relating to sewage.
Right. I'm pretty sure you just answered that question.
So that leads me to like the main thing I want to talk about is this movie is hideously ugly. Ugh. And yet has some really cool camera work, for lack of a better word. Like,
it's like a video game.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, honestly, at one point I was like, this reminds me of Into the Spider-Verse, which is not a comparison I ever would imagine that I would make. But it did really inventive, cool things with where the imaginary camera is, but still so ugly.
It was terrible. The skateboarding scene just made me, because it looked like so much of a video game, I was like, now I want to play Tony Hawk skateboarding video game.
Right? Yeah. It reminded me of the 99 Tarzan Disney movie, where they, like, that was a deep canvas is what it was called. That was like a huge animation innovation. And I was like, good job using what Deep Canvas came up with ugly computer animation.
Like it's badly drawn, but well choreographed, well storyboarded, whatever you want. This is the kind of animation that is meant to be seen through the back window of the minivan in front of you while you're stuck in traffic. Like, you just look at that and you're like, that's ugly, but I bet it's keeping the kids quiet. That's it.
One of the things that really fucked with me, it just took me out of everything with this movie, is there's in the very beginning, April calls Casey and she's all disappointed that he didn't remember to come pick her up or something. And she literally pouts. Like, she turns, I was infuriated by this motion, by this action, because
were they dating in the previous canon? Because that kind of threw me off.
I don't think so. I think it was always kind of like a he liked her and she didn't want to like him kind of thing, if I recall.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think they actually full on dated because he's like a filthy sewer rat.
Right.
No offense, Shredder.
Not a literal sewer rat.
No offense, Splinter. But
yeah.
Right. But there were so many things where it felt like this was a sequel to something I didn't see. Like in the very beginning, Lawrence Fishburne is like, Shredder has been vanquished.
Right.
And I'm like, has he now?
Okay. You want to tell me a little more about that?
Right.
Yeah, if you're trying to inspire confidence in me with your Turtles movie, don't start with, okay, Shredder's not here. And it's like, well, then what the fuck? Like,
why are we here? What's going on?
What? Yeah, there was that, and they used the 98 Godzilla font. I'm like, we are not starting strong. But I didn't hate it. Like, it was ugly and, you know, kind of pointless. Like, obviously I was kind of in and out of it, like, careful attention. The most notable thing about this movie is how completely ignorable it is. Oh, like, God. You could be in the next minivan and like you still get everything that's going on here. But like, it's not necessarily bad. There were a few sequences I like. Leonardo fights Raphael in disguise and then knocks the helmet. Like, that was a good little chunk of business.
I know, that's like, that awakens the child in me, right? Like, oh, they're brothers and they're gonna fight. Like, I'm such a sucker for that stuff. One thing I don't understand though, Leonardo's whole bit with Raphael as the Night Watcher is, don't be a vigilante. What?
Isn't that their whole thing?
Right. Like, do they have some kind of legal jurisdiction over the streets of New York? These Ninja Turtles?
That is an excellent question. And yes, like, that's all you guys are doing, right?
Right.
And also,
is it only okay if you're in a team?
I guess so. You don't do it by yourself. Don't vigilante solo. You must vigilante as a team. And why is Raphael the only one with a New York accent?
That's the other thing. Is that preserved from original canon? Because they have very different voices, and I don't get it. They're brothers.
I don't remember the original. I mean, no, in the cartoon, they all had very generic voices.
Right. Okay.
And I feel like that was the case in the movie, in the 90s movies,
yeah,
too.
Because
this felt a lot like the later movies. I don't know. Well, except for Michelangelo, who had a surfer dude voice.
The original ones, they all had surfer dude voices, which I will be on board with across the board. Yes, you all have these surfer dude voices. But then we come here and it's like only Raphael is like this gritty New Yorker with a New York accent and he's got an attitude and everything, and nobody else does. So it's really weird.
I totally agree. I am also really upset by the characterization of Donatello in this movie. Like, first of all, he barely exists. Donatello was obviously the coolest of the Ninja Turtles. Everyone agrees.
He's the IT one, right?
Yeah, he does machines.
Right.
But they make him IT in this. And honestly, he acts like Fraser Crane. Like, he's so fussy and just constantly like, how dare you act like surfer dudes. And I'm like, because that's who they are.
Right. Which I assume the whole surfer dude thing is something like they were watching whatever television was available to them at the time of their radioactive conception. I'm not exactly sure.
Their genetic rebirth,
right.
borrow a phrase from Lawrence Fishburne.
Thank you.
I really actually enjoyed Raphael in this movie. I thought that was a well-drawn arc. Leonardo is very like Cyclops in the X-Men movies, like, oh, you're so annoying, but I understand the burden of leadership. Those two worked for me. I think that it makes sense to make Michelangelo just a comic relief side character, and I did genuinely laugh out loud when he said he has nightmares about birthday parties.
The best moment in the movie is when he's suiting up and puts on a slightly larger version of his current head.
Like, why?
That I'm like, yep, good.
Why?
Good gag.
Why? Why was that necessary?
Like, to disguise himself.
You can't just roll in there as yourself and say it's a costume. I hated everything about this movie.
No, please go ahead, because I feel like me and Robin are both like, sure.
No,
and you're
I'm
down
just,
there
I'm
going
like fuck this movie. I couldn't get into it. I didn't like the animation. Was the voiceover and the whole, like, you know, dropping you in the middle of Central America somewhere, and that, you know, April O'Neil is like import export. Okay, sure, fine, whatever. And then there's the whole, you know, the animation is like, are you fucking kidding me with these chart with these pointing and her waistline, like her
oh my god,
like, are you kidding me? Like, her boobs were like 45 triple D's and her waist was like -8, and I don't know why she was drawn like
-8. Because the people who drew her have never seen a real human woman. No.
She would have literally like broken her back under, like, she wouldn't have been able to have taken a walk. And yeah, so, and the animation was just, it was just so distracting for me, and it was too video game cutaway scene for me, and I usually skip through those things, the cutaway scenes, and so very hard for me to pay attention to it.
That was the other thing, is this movie is 86 minutes long and I was struggling after the hour mark.
I should have been able to do this after those 5-hour Transformer movie.
Right? And to be fair, if we watch this pre-Transformers Nightmare, I would probably have a much lower opinion of it. But I'm like, this is decidedly better than a Transformers movie.
You're like, you know what? Not so bad.
Yeah.
Does this shed any light? Like, I looked up because, as you said, Robin, it did feel like this is a later chapter, but this is clearly, I thought, a standalone thing. This is kind of sort of in the canon of the first three movies.
Really? Like,
this was in development hell forever. This was first slated to be released in 2000, and John Woo was attached to direct. Now I do want to see that. I can't even make fun of that idea. I just
Do you think
see
he
John
made any storyboards? Do you think that any, like, his director pitch might have survived to make these cool sequences?
I think it was so early, and there are no doves, so no.
point.
But
I would have given it 10
like
points.
The idea was right. If there had been one dove fight, I think the idea is that the first three live action movies, like, that's why Shredder's defeated, and we've been chilling a little bit, is because they're referring to the first three movies. I guess it. Who cares?
Maybe that's when April and Casey got together, because I never saw the third one. I did not know it existed until I did an IMDb search for this to confirm that I was not insane and that Chris Evans was doing a voice in this movie.
Same.
And I was like, oh, I guess they made a third one. Must have been direct to video. Then I saw it was on our list. So who knows what happened to that movie?
I thought for sure that there was only the one movie. And is it just me, or am I remembering this incorrectly, but was there, like, one of the turtles had a thing for April and vice versa, and she had a thing for a turtle? Like, was this like a Howard the Duck situation? Like, with the whole...
That sounds true.
I want it to be true.
So maybe that.
Do you?
I know. It's bestiality. No matter how you look at it, I don't give a shit if things talk. It's not right. But, you know what? Never mind. I'm not. You know what?
Before we wrap up, and we're going to wrap up a little bit early on TMNT, what was with the thing where they gave billing to every celebrity or pseudo-celebrity doing a voice, and then as an afterthought credited the Turtles? Did you stick around to the credits? The credits were like Patrick Stewart, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Chris Evans, Maki, Kevin Smith, because he was the diner owner, and then like two other people with semi-recognizable names, and then the credits rolled and the first four names were the four turtles.
What?
Like,
that's weird.
Fuck so these guys, I guess.
Yeah,
so those guys are all voice actors, right? I think it kind of makes sense to cast voice actors to play your turtles, but my real theory is that they originally intended to get real actors to play the turtles and then ran out of money in paying Sarah Michelle Gellar and Patrick Stewart and Chris Evans, even though you know, Chris Evans was definitely way cheaper back then, but like they spent their money. I also want to acknowledge this was Mako's last project.
Yes, it was.
Again, Transformers. Who was it? Orson Welles? It's like,
Orson Welles and Scatman Crothers.
Right. If you are an older legendary actor, be careful about which youth-related projects you pick up, because it will be your last.
Now's not the time to be like, you know what would be fun? Nope. You had time before.
Right?
I apologize for calling him Maki instead of Mako. First, he has to go out on TMNT, then I mispronounce his name.
I'm also not 100% sure I'm correctly pronouncing his name.
Makoto?
I literally did my thing where I did a YouTube search to try to see other people saying his name and got three different answers.
Well, because he went by three different things. His full name was Makoto Iwamatsu. He often just went by Mako. He is credited in this movie just as Mako, but he had a long, distinguished career that unfortunately ended here.
Shameful.
MPAA is easy this week. It is rated PG for animated action violence, some scary cartoon images, and mild language. Scary cartoon images and mild language. Yeah, this is a PG movie, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's an easy one. So let's rate it. I mean, I don't want to pretend it was good. You know, I was right in the middle, and it just passed into the positive territory when I gave it three extra points for setting a fight scene to the song Black Betty. Anytime there is action to Black Betty, I'm happy. So 51. I give it a 51.
Must be a lot of times for you, because that happens often in movies. an 11. I have found the movie that I would watch Private Parts before I watched this TMNT again.
So what I did, or I'm actually checking my math right now, is the moments that I enjoyed, which is some of the voice cast and the cool cinematography or whatever, and then a little bit of the storyline, which I'm a sucker for, I would give a 70. If the rest of the movie could hold up to that quality, if the animation did not look hideous, I think that I could like genuinely dig this movie. And then all of the bad stuff, I gave an 18, so that's an 88 divided by 2 is 44, so that's my score.
Interesting. Interesting math there.
Camila, I don't want to pick apart your process, because I did last week.
What?
I'm just looking here, and I just want to clarify one point. This is worse than both Transformers movies that we watched
to me,
in your
yes.
eyes.
But not very, very much. That's like... Oof. What, 3 points in between them? Like, I gave Trent last
Nevertheless.
Night 14, and I gave Extinction 13, and TMNT was 11. So, I mean, it's not like they were hitting really hard there. It's just, had Transformers,
I think it's legit.
Had Transformers had the same animation, it probably would have gotten much, it probably would have been the single digits.
Negative 15.
Right.
Right.
It's the animation that really took it, that really just buried it for me.
It's so ugly.
Well, a good hearty anchoring by Camila takes this way down in our list. We end up with a final score of 35 and a third. That, for a point of comparison, is the same score we gave Oh God, You Devil in the bottom 10 of our selections, despite me overranking it because I was a 5-year-old boy in the year 1990. We know that's why it happened.
Yeah, it's fine. You know what? You are you. You live your beautiful life, Sean Collier.
Thank you for that. Let's go to the bingo card. As everyone knows, we had a bingo last week. That means it's time for a new bingo card. Camila has made things a little different.
Yes. Before, I forget exactly, we had like 4x4 rows across, I think it was the last one.
This it was one, five, or by five, five by five. It was five by
yeah,
five.
Five by
yeah.
five.
Like Faith.
Yes, exactly. And this time it's 4x4 because it took way too long to get a bingo last time. So this time what we have on our bingo card, we've got women director, talking animal, celebrity cameo, family vacation, not the film, adapted from a TV show, natural disaster, on-screen American president, still there. Original that has a remake. The quote, I'm getting too old for this.
Love it.
The movie was a movie that was released in 1988. I'm still holding on to that. We own the DVD square. I really want that. Change this.
Gonna happen someday.
Scene in a restaurant, not just a coffee shop. I've expanded that. Biopic. A murder happens. An MPAA rating is not bullshit.
So we definitely get that square and scene in restaurant.
Yes.
What was the scene in the restaurant?
The Black Betty scene.
The fight, right?
Oh, that did happen. Yes.
And talking animals.
I mean, it was a kitchen, but.
But a kitchen attached to a restaurant.
Yeah. Talking animals.
Oh, talking animals.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like an obvious one I should have noticed right away. So, wow, we're making out like bandits on this bingo card in this first movie.
Adapted from TV show.
Holy crap. Mm.
No?
No.
Okay, because the TV show is adapted from a comic book. Is that what we're saying?
Because,
is it?
Yeah, because this starts with a comic book the path to TMNT specifically does not go straight through the TV show. So
got it. All right. You know, that's pretty great. It's pretty great on day one.
I'll take it.
Bingo card one. Mm-hmm. One.
Yeah, I could. Hey, if we draw something that a woman directed with a cameo in it. So Wayne's World. If we draw Wayne's World, then I'm set. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Hey, I watched Aliens. Did anybody else?
I watched Aliens.
Samesies.
So it's the Rocky III protocol. If you didn't know what we were talking about last week, every now and then, when the movie we draw is fine but boring, we draw another movie as an optional additional thing to talk about. We won't do this on a Transformers because, you, as we demonstrated, you can fill a lot of time hating Transformers. But when it's this happened the first time with Ant-Man. We drew Ant-Man and it was like, it's fine. What are we going to do? And we rolled the dice again and landed on Rocky III and said, obviously, we're all watching Rocky III. So TMNT, if you were listening last week, which you certainly should, like we said, good episode. I happened to hit the draw again button and coincidentally, it landed on Aliens, the sequel to the very movie we were talking about last week. So
it was a no-brainer. Like, we absolutely had to.
So while we're talking, Aliens was released July 18th, 1986, the 17th number one movie of the year. It won its opening weekend with $10 million. The runner-up was week five of Karate Kid 2. Aww. There were two other new releases that weekend. They were both total flops, not in the top 10. The vampire stripper comedy Vamp? What? Never heard of that.
Vampire stripper comedy?
Are the vampire the strippers?
Yes. The one sentence description was like, two guys go to pick up chicks at a strip club, not knowing it's a strip club full of vampires. I'm like, sold. Let's go. What are we doing? Vamp came out that week, and Roman Polanski's Pirates, starring Walter Matthau, came out that week. Aliens was a four-week number one movie. Among the films that could not dethrone it were Heartburn, Maximum Overdrive, Haunted Honeymoon, Friday the 13th Part 6, Howard the Duck, that's the second Howard the Duck reference today, Flight of the Navigator, and One Crazy Summer. Finally dropped that top spot in its fifth weekend to The Fly. Aliens went on to make $85.1 million, the sixth best film from 1986, behind Back to School. It grossed slightly less money than Back to School. Aliens was nominated for 7 Oscars and won 2. Robin, can you name them?
Okay, at this point, I think makeup was a real category, but I don't think it would have won. So visual effects, yeah.
It won visual effects. If makeup was a real category, it was not nominated.
Oh, okay. And, well, there's that also, that whole thing of where's the line between makeup and visual effects, and for creatures, it should be makeup. But anyway, sound?
It won visual effects and sound effects editing, which is what they called it then. It was nominated for sound, which is what they called sound mixing. You know, they've never figured this
Thank
out.
Thank God that they figured it out. It's only one category from here on
now
out.
Now it's only one category.
If we still have Oscars again, which who knows?
Yeah, it's going to be a weird one. One visual effects and sound effects editing, nominated for sound. And do you know the other four offhand?
So Sigourney Weaver was nominated for Best Actress, which is indisputably cool. What a cool Oscar nomination. And editing?
Mm-hmm.
Cinematography?
No.
I don't know the other ones.
Art direction and score were also nominated. Yes, Sigourney Weaver nominated for Best Actress. Lost to?
86. It's in between Geraldine Page and Cher, which means Marley Matlin.
Marley Matlin. So explain that movie to me.
Children of the Lesser
God. All I know is that
God.
Marley Matlin won an Oscar. That's all I know about that.
It is about William Hurt goes to teach at a school for the deaf, where Marley Matlin is a graduate who has stayed on in some kind of staff capacity. I believe she's a custodian, and they fall in love. It's pretty good.
Like an 80s drama.
I enjoyed it very much. She deserved her Oscar. I think part of it was a whole like, oh, a deaf actress. We're doing something woke. They clearly did not say that in the 80s, but
we're so progressive.
Right. There you go. But she's like really, really good.
So Aliens. Sigourney Weaver's underwear has grown considerably.
Still, like everybody else, they had like the other women, they had full on boxer shorts and t-shirts. Just because she's not in the army, she's not good enough to wear army green.
Are these people in the army? What is
Marines.
Going on with
was it? It was Marines, right?
Okay,
this is
so
a Marines deployment on a mission.
So the Earth military, potentially the United States military, who knows, sends people out into deep space. There's a space force.
And this is why they wanted to do a space version of the a space arm of the military, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Somebody saw Aliens 2 and was like, you know what? This isn't right.
I mean,
we should have a dedicated arm of our armed services to go out to space to fight the aliens.
Listen, I got to tell you, if the United States could give everybody health care and pay reparations and do all the other things that we should be doing, pay people to stay home during a pandemic, if we had successfully sorted out all those things the government actually should be doing and have leftover money, I'm all about having a space force. Because who knows when aliens are going to show up and fuck up our stuff.
It is 2020.
Right? So I'm okay with it.
Wait. Is that what the Space Force is for?
I don't know. Like fighting aliens?
Let's for a moment assume that there's any point. I thought the Space Force was to, you know, shoot the bad guys on
from
Earth
space?
From orbit.
I don't know specifically what they're there for. I would assume, though, somebody on there secretly is like, I really hope we find some aliens. what we're really doing is fighting aliens, is what somebody's grand scheme is.
Right. That's what the Space Force should be for.
But
well,
aliens.
Here they are on a, I guess it's a sequel, but I was a little bit taken aback by the number of things that happen again. Like, again, we're going to go to the same planet to see what's going on. We don't have enough information. Again, that's going to end with people not listening to Ripley and get into some of the same kind of power struggles. And she's eventually going to have to blow a slightly larger alien out of a slightly larger airlock. Like, I'm not criticizing Aliens. Aliens is great. I just, knowing how different these movies are, it's surprising how many beats we repeat.
Also,
really good point.
Also, saving the cat, this time it was a kid, which I don't know why we had to have a kid there to begin with.
Bad trade. The cat was better.
Yeah. Thank you. Justice for Jonesy. Newt is more annoying than I remember.
Yeah.
Like, her entire role is Ripley.
Yeah, yeah. And then at some point she calls her mommy, like, towards the end. Mm-hmm. I'm like, bitch, how dare you? That is disrespectful to your own mama, who...
Also, who got eaten by aliens.
Right, probably protecting your ass, you ungrateful, traitorous...
Listen, when your daughter gets a little bit older, Camila, you need to explain to her, hey, if I ever get eaten by aliens, don't you dare call the first lady who shows up mommy.
Exactly. You make her earn it, like, for real. Give me a year at least mourning. Could you mourn me for a year?
Also, the word aunt exists, right? If you have or if you have a parental figure and your actual parent is absent, there's an easy solution for you.
I didn't like Newt. I thoroughly enjoyed the moment where Ripley's like, your doll isn't having nightmares. And Newt's like, yeah, because she's made of plastic. Like, I have been running for an alien for months. Do not patronize me.
Yeah, I kind of felt like there was way too many people involved. And like, I also feel like at least in the 80s or the 90s, at some point, whenever you get a movie about or semi about like the armed services, armed forces, army, marines or whatever, and you got this group, there's always like these stereotypical, like, we've got the black guy and then we've got some schmo who's from some podunk town somewhere down south, and then we've got
Bill Paxton.
Yes. We've got, you know, like the overly masculine woman who has to like prove herself, or
Vasquez.
Yes. And it's just, it's,
I gotta,
and then
tell
the playboy,
you,
the guy who's like, which I don't remember his name, but
the guy from Terminator,
is that where he's from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I gotta tell you, Vasquez is so hot. Like,
yeah, she's hard.
The horizon of my heterosexuality is Vasquez.
Vasquez should have survived and married Ripley. That's the alien cubed I want to see.
I mean, it would have made sense that she would have been one of the... And she probably would have survived if that dude didn't decide to come back and blow them both to hell. She's like fighting. Like, wait a minute. Whoa. I didn't sign on for this. I can crawl. You go ahead and blow yourself up if you want.
I agree.
Isn't this also our second wormy 80s Paul Reiser? What else was he in?
Beverly Hills Cop 2, right? Yeah, and his popped collar was really on my nerves. And
he's
also,
so wormy. That's such a good word for him.
Right. And this was a whole thing. Like, they cajoled Ripley into coming back, and she's like, only if we agree this is a destroy mission and we're not bringing those bitches back. And he's like, I promise. And then we get there, and it's like, okay, guess what? We want to bring some back. We want to save them.
One thing that I do think is genuinely cool in this movie is that the android is not evil.
Right.
And Ripley is prejudiced against him or whatever for completely reasonable reasons.
The other one tried to suffocate him with a rolled up magazine. Like, that's serious. That's some
exactly.
shit you don't get over very quickly.
But it's cool to see that, like, the human is doing what the android did last time, and the android in this one it's a heart of gold.
Even when it's like splurred in two, like his half of his
milky
top,
whiteness.
Yes, his the top half of his body saves Newt in the end from being sucked into space hell.
Which I like that moment because it's like, well, yeah, I'm ripped in half, but I'm a robot. Like, it sucks, but I'm not dead. I wasn't alive.
Right. Still... The last guy could talk when it was just his head.
Right. Come on now. Let's mm-hmm. give him some credit. I feel like we wasted a lot of time. Like, she should have got into that suit much sooner. Because that was
spent the whole movie
right because that was dope
right?
as hell. Like we start off like in the first 20 minutes, like the very beginning, it's like, oh hey, this is a cool thing, might show up later, and we wait till like the last 15 minutes of the movie before she like pulls it out. But then the whole thing where she's like, get away from her, you bitch, I finally now understand a reference from Scream 2 that I have seen and heard thousands of times and just never really exactly mm-hmm. knew where it was from. So thank you for that.
Iconic.
Right, yeah.
Everything with Ripley in the loader is just perfect. And if we, I don't know if we're scoring this movie or not. I can't remember the details of the Rocky III protocol, but that's like 25 points of my score.
I don't think we scored Rocky III.
We didn't score Rocky III. I feel like that was an oversight. Like, why didn't we do that? But
I think we also, when we first did it, we're like, ooh, we're being naughty. We're breaking the rules. And as time has gone on, we've clearly decided the rules are not as important as they were originally.
Before we get to that, though, let's talk about Bill Paxton for a minute.
Game over, man. Game over.
This role is either perfect or goddamn ridiculous, and I'm leaning towards the latter. Like, part of
I think
like,
it is both.
Okay.
I feel
what
it's
were you
a little
say?
More...
It's worth noting that he, God rest his soul, was always a bad actor who was never even kind of good. So I think he's just doing a bad job, but it's fun.
I want to deny that he's a bad actor, but I cannot.
And then you look for evidence and find none.
What about, he was in A Simple Plan, right?
Yes, I think so. That was with Billy Bob Thornton, right?
Right.
I think he was.
Remember that being a really solid movie.
I think the thing is that Bill Paxton has just always been consistent in whatever character he plays is basically interchangeable with any and all of them, except for maybe this guy in Aliens. So we've all been kind of duped into believing that, sure, He's a good actor. And also, again, we've been through this several times, but I had to Google again to see if he was still alive. I didn't remember that he was the one that he died recently.
When you say he's the one, do you mean other than Bill Pullman?
I know it wasn't Bill Pullman. Right.
They're my second favorite pair of actors that people can't keep apart after Keith David and David Keith.
By
the way,
Dylan McDermott.
I spent 20
Dermot
minutes
Nolan.
Of this movie thinking it was Keith David.
Who is it?
Not Keith David. It's right. Al Matthews is his name. His entire Wikipedia beginning is he was in Aliens. He was in one of the Aliens video games, and his character in Aliens inspired a character in the Halo video games. Like, he is this guy from this movie. And because I like at that point had half an eye on the screen and he has Keith David's voice, I was like, oh good, Keith David. Oh no, this is the Keith David for when Keith David is not available.
Right, the poor man's Keith David. Mm-hmm. So David Keith is white and yes. not at all similar to Keith David, but his name is backwards.
Right,
so
yeah.
When I see Keith David, I have a moment of, wait, is his name David Keith?
I think it was more that like when I first saw Aliens, I was thinking, man, this guy reminds me of Keith David. And then in the intervening 2 years, I had just deleted this man out of my mind and put Keith David in Aliens in my head. So when we drew it, I was like, oh man, I get to talk about Keith, how much I love Keith David on this podcast.
Because he's the best.
And then I saw it.
Did I tell you? I've talked about when I photographed him, yes? He did a show at MCG Jazz here in Pittsburgh, and I forget what it was, but he was doing the life of some famous jazz singer, and it was like a one-man show kind of thing with the full orchestra behind him, and I photographed the show and met him afterwards. Now, mind you, before all of this, because of Requiem for a Dream, I have had the very skeeve-like feelings about Keith David.
Yeah.
Very just like, anytime I saw him. So it took a lot for me to like go back and actually like hello, I'm going to be your photographer this evening, da 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 da. But he was very delightful. He was a very pleasant man. I went ahead, got a photo with him, and yeah, so he's a good dude. I'm able to now separate him from that Keith David the man from Keith David in Requiem for a Dream from ass to
overwrite
ass.
It in your brain with the 15 minute long fight sequence in They Live.
That's right. Wait, was he also in The Thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right.
One of my favorite video games is Saints Row 4. The Saints Row series started as like a whatever Grand Theft Auto clone and then progressively kept getting more and more over the top to the point where by the fourth one, it's purely comedic and they have superpowers. Like the street gang that you started playing as in the second one is now running the country. And one of the plot points is your character is the president. Your chief of staff is Keith David, not Keith David doing the voice. You've just hired Keith David as Keith David, who is all over the video game. He's there the entire time. And at a certain point, he disappears for a little while, and you find him fighting Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yes! I love every bit of
it. And then from that point on, you can call Roddy Piper to help you. It's so great.
Wow.
So I have something else to say about Aliens, though. We've taken a little bit of a tangent. So like there's that whole thing where like people say like, oh, it's so cool in Alien, like you barely see the creature, right? Like going back to Jaws, you barely see the shark. This movie is like, fuck it. We're going to show the aliens in all their glory multiple times in the last hour of the movie. And it works.
It does. There was like a slight moment like towards the end where I started to wonder, like, are these animatronic or is this a guy in a suit?
Both.
Or what? Okay. But yeah, like, I mean, it does still work. And like, they remain to be icky and creepy and just not terrifying, but it's a little bit scary.
I think, A, it's good effects. But I think the main thing is it's really good character design. Mm. And so it's interesting and compelling to look at, even when the effects maybe don't quite pass muster from our 2020 eyes. Right. Like when it looks more like a guy in a suit, right. It is just cool to look at. It's a good character design.
Yeah, it's really intricate detail.
I mean, I think as far as showing them, it's because this is an action movie, not a horror movie. Like we discussed this a little bit. You can say that this is action horror, but it's definitely not capital H horror.
Right.
As even when they're first going in there, it's scary, but it is set up like a military mission where clearly James Cameron was like, I'm doing something like we can hit the beats, but I'm doing something different. By the way, James Cameron wants to fuck the color blue as a concept. This is when I put this, because like, obviously the blue people in Avatar, Titanic is... Man, look at the ocean forever. This movie begins with a blue light scanning over a blue room, and then the whole thing is like underworld levels of blue tinged for the rest of the movie. What is this
day
color?
For night? It's day for night. Like that is how I learned what day for night. Literally, like I remember when I was first reading about that, my dad was like, "Oh, like in Terminator 2," and like showed me the scenes where they do that, and then I was like, "Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I totally know what that is."
I hate to like, okay, here's one more tangent about aliens. Robin, do with this what you want. But now it's, on a second viewing, it's bothering me. When they figure out that if they shoot the guns, everything will blow up. Why don't they just say, hey, come back? Why do they say, one, they don't explain that.
Right.
They just say, no reason. Don't shoot your guns at all. No matter what happens, don't shoot your guns. It's important. Don't worry about it. But, and they're not like, yo, everybody come back. We have a problem. Let's try this again tomorrow. What is happening in that scene?
Everybody's like dick is in the way. That's what's happening in that scene. Like they don't want to admit to being wrong. They don't want like everybody is like really bloodlust, I guess is what it is. Or they just want to shoot something. And then they get told, no, you can't do that. And then the guy's like, fuck, fine, whatever. But I'm still going to kill some stuff some way, shape or form. That's way.
I think that's a good explanation. Like they definitely take Ripley being like, you don't want any part of this. Stay away from this planet as like a challenge accepted.
Right. Exactly. Like, why did you bring me here? Like, why am I here if nobody's going to listen to me?
The story of Ripley's life.
Right.
I do love it. Like it's a different project and I can nitpick, but I can only nitpick slightly. Yeah. What the hell? Let's give it a rating. I give Aliens. You can't say it without accenting the n's.
Right.
I give Aliens an 87.
I didn't think about this ahead of time, but my gut says 80.
Yeah, I'm also going with 80. I gave Alien 78.
Do you like this more?
Yeah, mainly because of the last 15 minutes. Like, once she gets in that thing and fights it, it's like, that just shoots it
so
up.
So cool.
Yeah.
It's just so cool.
It's good stuff. And I also really like her haircut in this one, too.
Also very cool. And her underwear fit.
Yes.
So
that is an 82 and a third. Very high on our list. Now Alien and Aliens are 1 and 4, respectively, on our overall list, which seems about right. And it's all because of Addie Twigg. Thanks, Addie.
Thanks, Addie.
Thanks, Addie.
Let's draw a movie. As a reminder, the only veto currently in play would require all three of us to agree that we're not watching it before we can successfully not watch. Well, it landed on The Deep from 1977. It is based on a novel by the guy who did Jaws and also has Robert Shaw in it.
And water.
Yeah.
And water. The Deep. We're going to find out what that's all about. In the meantime, TMNT was released March 23rd, 2007. What was the number one song in America when these turtles reclaimed the top of the box office charts?
Timberlake?
No, you're all around it.
Timberland?
Closer, warmer.
Wait, which one was warmer?
We'll play Hot Cold.
Fergie.
Correct, but expand.
London what? Bridge?
No, I don't know this
Glamorous?
One. That's it.
Okay.
I don't remember that one. It's Fergie featuring Ludacris, technically.
She spells the word glamorous out. She says flossy a lot. It's okay.
It's okay is the reaction to Fergie's whole career. It's like, right. Yeah.
Sure.
It's okay. She's allowed. Number one.